And welcome back to another episode of Mary and Andy Geek Out.
I'm Mary, he's Pippin.
I'm Pippin. Hey, let's go tell trees to tell a wizard that he should stop doing things.
That is a spot-on Hobbit impression.
I do some really good Hobbit impressions. Anyway, we are back to Teen Titans.
Remember when we talked a lot about a game about bugs?
Oh, that was fun.
Good times.
I miss bug fables.
Yes, we should just change this to a bug fables podcast.
Ooh, it wouldn't last too long, though, unless you just did an intricate episode on each of the characters.
Each character, each plot point, the history of each area.
Our feelings. No, Kabu's feelings.
Kabu's very gay feelings for everyone.
For Neo, especially. But anyway, we're not going to do that. We're back to Teen Titans Season 4. This is, of course...
I did not mean to drive away our Teen Titans audience immediately.
Oh no. It's okay. I mean, that's not the point of our podcast. The point of our podcast is to talk about everything that we like, which is pretty great.
Yes, but we're promising Teen Titans right now.
That's true.
As you can tell by the Teen Titans theme we played at the beginning of this.
Yes. It'd be funny if I actually, like, aha, joke's on you, Mary, I put in... the Batman theme. I don't know. Anyway, this is, of course, the season of Raven and her whole thing with her dad. This is basically Raven's
theme. This is the daddy
theme.
Issues season.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny, because one could argue that Tara had dad issues also.
So, but before I get, I guess, too ahead of myself, we covered episodes 1 through 3. So episode 1 is titled... quote, episode 297-494, this is the Control Freak episode where they basically do a lot of channel hopping.
Episode 2 is the quest where Robin sets out to find a martial arts master, meanwhile the rest of the team is trying on his clothes.
That's about it. Yeah, that's about the sum of it. And episode 3 is Birthmark, the
beginning of the end.
The beginning of the end, yes. The catalyst to Raven's prophecy. It's kind of hard to explain the plot of the episode, like, succinctly.
It's Raven's birthday. She hates it.
Yeah, she hates it. You know what's funny is that compared to the previous season, where we immediately start off episode 1, Cyborg goes to the Hive Academy, that kicks off the events of that season... For this one, it waits a little bit before it shows you its cards of when the season's
about.
And
I wonder if
that
wasn't, like, a conscious choice, because this is, like, probably the darkest of the arcs.
Right. I honestly think it was.
Or they're like, okay, we don't want to have parents keeping their children from watching this immediately. Let's get a few silly episodes in.
Yeah, they actually started off pretty well, I think. Let's get right into it. So that first episode is, quote, again, episode 297-494, which is the actual production number for the episode.
Did you check on that? I did check on that,
yep. I think this is the episode that really solidified for a lot of people what makes Control Freak great. In
yes.
that you can just shove in as much pop culture references as you can. And
which is very funny to me because I criticized the Mod Mad episode for that. But these are our generations, our countries, the mainstreamest of the nerd culture.
Yeah, this is like, I mean, compared to Mad Mod, I think they did a really good job with this one. They really didn't just try to limit it themselves to just, just like... the Star Trek Star Wars reference. They went with like a fishing series, a soap opera series that was in Spanish. It wasn't in Spanish, but it's a parody of the Spanish soap operas. They also had, the typical news anchor one. I wrote them down. Let's see. They had the episodes that they spoofed were Game Show, a James Bond episode. Dukes of Hazzard.
Fishing wildlife show.
Yes.
Kind of combined into one, I think.
A Barney spinoff.
Oh, wait, no.
A road, like an actual roadrunner, like it's
yes.
actually Wile E. Coyote. A 50s sitcom, a horror movie, and football and a kids cartoon. The one with like the bird.
Yeah,
and
he's looking for his hippo. Dr. Seussy, but also angled very young.
And then it wasn't a TV show, but it was a parody of a medication, the new blue Xynthos.
Yes. From the makers of Azeroth and Metreon.
Comes Xynthos. And
there should have been more advertisements in that, I think.
I think so. They could have definitely leaned in more heavy. I think.
But you know what? If something's going to age very fast, it is an advertisement.
Right.
And then, have an even shorter cultural impact than a TV show.
At the very least, I think they could have easily done a cereal mascot one with Beast Boy being, like, one of the mascots. I think that could have, like, easily just been, like...
I mean, they kind of get... when you do a Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner thing, you almost get your standard cereal thing, like, with the Trix Rabbit or Cookie Crisp or...
I really like...
Sugar Bear.
Is Sugar Bear? No, that... Yeah. No, I was thinking of Game Grumps. Anyway, sorry. I really like that one because Warner Brothers owns both DC and, of course, the Looney Tunes cartoons.
Yes.
And so every now and then, the two kind of...
Overlap.
Collide. This is a great example of it because Beast Boy... was basically exact green copy of Wile E. Coyote.
Yes.
Like, down to the art style and everything, except for the fact that he was green. And they use a lot of the same jokes in it. When he's trying to chase Control Freak, he just turned the tables on Wile E. Coyote. I don't want to get too far off topic, but an example of DC referencing Looney Tunes. I forgot what the movie was called, but it was kind of based off the Silver Age. And it was like the Martian Manhunter, and he visits Earth, and he just starts watching TV, which is how he gets his culture. And he just morphs himself to, like, reflect what he's watching. And one of the things he morphs into is Bugs Bunny. That's just an example of that. But anyway, I got us a little bit off topic. We didn't really actually discuss the plot of the episode, so
yes. So it starts off before the credits with we control the vertical, we control the whatever, which I never know what that's referencing. I've only ever seen the reference.
Yeah, I feel like it's almost a reference to the Outer Limits,
maybe,
but I feel like that is slightly different as well. It's definitely like
it's a very specific reference. Mm-hmm. We should have looked it up before we came on here and sounded ignorant, but anyway, Control Freaks on TV, and Beast Boy sounds the alert. What's funny is, like, it's after the credits roll, like, he hits the alarm, and it's, like, only hit in emergencies, and then a note's pasted on that says, that means you, Beast Boy.
Yeah.
Which, that's the kind of environmental storytelling I like.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they come, they see... They initially doubt Beast Boy, but then Control Freak shows up on TV, so they go track him down and find a broadcasting... Actually, was it like a TV store?
It was like a giant remote, I think.
No. I mean the location, not what it is.
Oh, yeah. It was a TV store. Yeah, you're right.
Yes. Control Freak sees them through the TV, mocks them a little, and they find out what he used.
Mm-hmm.
And Cyborg's like, he has enough tech in here to break half the laws of physics. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, no, it's just like, there's your explanation. You don't need anything else from it.
It's impossible tech that Cyborg recognizes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and like, it's funny because they didn't say anything like that for Mad Maud and Mumbo Jumbo. It's just, it's magic. So it's like, okay. And that's all the explanation that we frankly need. And
yeah, it's true.
And it's just...
It's kind of funny that they acknowledge, like, oh, he's got tech to do impossible things. So that's it. All right. I'm going to say it came from the fifth dimension.
Ooh.
Because that seems very Batmite Mixel Spitalek.
Does.
Larry tech.
Yeah.
Assuming you can turn that into technology. So
yes, go for it.
Before Cyborg can fix it, Beast Boy pushes a button and they're in the TV. So thank goodness, or this would have been a very boring episode.
Oh, yeah. And basically, they start channel hopping. That's literally what they do. Yeah, it's just channel hopping to find Control Freak.
Like, it's interesting because, you know, some of this stuff is, like, live TV. They got sports. They got news. Mm-hmm. But they got game shows. But as they seem to have pretty good rules, which is you are in, like, a pocket dimension of that show.
Right. They, like, they and they never
like
they,
when they're in a monster movie, they're like we know it's fake, and it's like, oh, it's real here.
Yeah, no, it's like it's they really stick to those rules, which is really nice to see. And part of what I think
I'm sorry, finish your thought.
I was going to say that Control Freak is kind of a non-threatening villain.
And yeah, that was what I was going to say. Initially, yeah. It seems like his plan's just to be in TV, and it's like, okay, that's going to be weird for culture for a while, but mm-hmm. not doing any harm.
Right. But in this case, he's actually actively getting powers from these different TV shows to make him more and more unstoppable. And, like, he's basically taking, yeah, so like, gadgets, and he's learning kung fu and magic.
Oh, also, it turns out that him being on TV is literally rotting people's brain.
Yeah, no, there's a really great moment where, well, first off, there's a scene that you pointed out that I didn't notice where they're all chasing Control Freak and they're going through the different channels and everyone's like focused on Control Freak, but every time they run by the screen, Robin is the one looking directly at the camera, like looking at yes. us, the viewer. And Mary pointed that out and was like, whoa, that's kind of funny. And then, like, halfway through the episode, Robin gets right up to the camera. His whole face is taking up the screen. And he goes, you gotta stop watching the television. It's rotting your brains. Turn off the TV now.
Which is extra funny because he's interrupting a talk show where a guy's about to share the secret of world peace.
Right. But also, it's funny, too, because it's like he's talking to us, the viewer.
Why aren't you turning it off?
It's so great, too, because if you turned it off, then you wouldn't get that message. Yes. But I love those kinds of jokes.
Yes.
So this is one of the first, I guess, post-Silky episodes where we see Silky being taken care of by Starfire.
All right.
There's, in this episode, she's walking Silky when the alarm
about to go out for a walk.
Yeah, about to go out for a walk. And we get to see Silky again in the following episode as well.
And it's very cute.
So I love that kind of, that it's continuity. That creeping continuity. It's yes. like things that have been established are coming back and reaffirming that, which is really nice.
I do want to say real quick, Control Freaks... mugshot, he has a number that's 257-325. I did not check, but do you think that's his first episode?
That's probably his first episode, yeah, that where he appeared in. I would not be surprised.
Because even when it's not a fourth wall breaking episode, self-referential episode, they usually throw in stuff like that anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This one almost certainly has it.
There's a lot of good references in this show. I should say, so in the end, they are on a show that they called...
Clash of the Planets?
Clash of the Planets, yes.
Which is like Star Wars, but a TV show.
It's basically...
It seems like the big cultural phenomenon that Star Wars was.
Yeah, it's like a quasi combination of Star Wars, Star Trek. It has a lot of references from both series, from both franchises, I guess. And, but a lot of it was mainly Star Wars. I mean, they had, like, actual lightsaber sound effects, which is really funny to hear. And it's just very parody in that. And so the way they defeat Control Freak is through Beast Boy's nerdy knowledge. Like, he knows, because, like, it's something like that, because Control Freak has obtained a certain level of power... he's now able to be banished in a certain dimension. And so Beast Boy basically says the words to banish Control Freak, and then he gets imprisoned in that square planar existence, similar to, like, Superman 2, I want to say.
Yes, also the move... No, actually Control Freak before that did a sort of Kamehameha move on him.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. There were so many references to, like, that kind of thing, which is nice.
one of the things that I wished was a real show was Offworld Outlaw, which appears to have a villainous protagonist who's an alien with a wide-brimmed hat that shoots down spaceships. So it's like a cool anti-hero western in space. And yes. I would love that to be real.
That would be really cool. In fact, Control Freak hired him, hired the monster from the 50s monster film, and hired a Robbie the Robot parody.
Who was evil.
Who was evil, to come hunt the Teen Titans, and Beast Boy's like, oh my god! And Control Freak is like, oh my god, this is so cool that I get to tell these guys what to do.
Right, and he's doing like a Godfather parody when he calls on them. He's got the white cat, and he's in this like highly contrasted room.
Yeah, it's great.
And it's like, yeah, if you were a huge nerd that had control of TV and wanted to defeat the Teen Titans, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's kind of too bad they didn't actually pull in, like, references from real movies. Like, can you imagine?
That Warner Brothers owns?
I should have looked that up. Like, what does Warner Brothers, what did it own at the time?
I feel like even with Warner Brothers owning it, that still would have given some legal headaches.
Yeah, that is true.
Anyway, as far as off-brand references go, they were good.
I know, I agree with that. And then the last thing, that after they take care of Control Freak, they have this really funny conversation in the end where they're talking about, like, was there a moral for this? Like, Raven said, like, so TV rots your brains. And Starfire is like, but if it wasn't for Beast Boy and him watching television all the time, we would have lost.
Although, if it wasn't for Beast Boy pressing the button, they wouldn't have been in there.
Very true. And so then they said, Raven says, like, so there was no moral at all? And they just all start laughing. And it, like, the camera cuts back a little, and it shows Cyborg, and he has his arm around the soap opera girl that he was interacting with earlier. It's like, where'd she come from? How'd she get out of the TV? But it was so funny just to see that, like, little, like, little reference in there, which is so funny.
Oh, right. I can't quite remember it, but I do want to talk really quickly about Control Freak's distinct evil laugh.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a little bit, there's like an obnoxious edge to it, and it's just like perfectly cultivated to him. I mean, I feel as somebody who enjoys One Piece, you appreciate a signature laugh.
I don't remember the laugh, but I'll have to re-listen to it then. Or maybe if I can find the clip, I'll put it in here for this episode.
Please do.
Yes. But anyway, this is a fun episode. I mean, like, it's not really high stakes. There put a lot of good references in it. And, you know, as far as zany episodes go, this is...
You know how you can tell it's a fun episode?
The Japanese intro.
Also, Beast Boy turns into, like, three different dinosaurs through the course of the thing.
Yeah. Always cool to see dinosaurs in this one.
That's how you know. It's just like, you know what? Usually we put a limit on how many dinosaurs he gets to be, but we're just going all out.
We're
going to
go all out.
He gets to be all the dinosaurs.
That's always fun. I always like it when he turns into dinosaurs.
The makers of Azerath and Metreon are proud to introduce Xynthos. New and improved Xynthos gives you exactly what you need, exactly when you need it. And because it's blue, Xynthos goes with everything. Xynthos isn't right for everyone and may cause bloating, cramping, hair loss, disturbing visions, fits of rage, and growth of additional eyes. Children under 3 should not be exposed to Xynthos. Do not get Xynthos wet and never feed it after midnight. If you experience trouble meditating, stop saying Xynthos and consult your ancient scrolls immediately. New blue Xynthos.
All right, shall we go into the next episode?
The Quest.
The Quest.
So it starts pretty boring. Robin's fighting a martial artist dude who's stolen a golden staff.
Yes.
And they fight, and the guy's like, I've been trained by the best. And Robin's like, so have I. And we're like, that's Batman he's talking about.
Hey, I know that guy.
And anyway, Robin gets beat and is like, I need to train hard. Where is this? Where is this person who trained this person? And so he goes without any leads, as far as I can tell, and leaves the team behind. And I guess it's a slow day back home.
Yeah, he probably just Googled where the master lived.
The master.
Yeah.
In the U.S., presumably?
I don't think so.
It does not. It looks like it's, like, somewhere.
It's supposed to be in East Asia?
Somewhere in East Asia.
It's very vague on where it's supposed to be.
Yes, or how Robin found it. But that's not important. What's important is the B plot. Yeah. Where Beast Boy kicks things off by stealing Robin's costume.
Yeah. This is honestly like a fun episode again because, first off, it's a Robin episode. And, you know, I mean, if, like, I was like thinking about when I was watching it, like a lot of times when you have a Robin episode, it has some sort of Slade level to it.
Yes.
And then I was thinking the previous time we had a Robin episode that didn't involve Slade was the one with Larry.
Uh-huh.
And that was like, all right. But this is fun. Yeah. Because one of the things they were kind of like, the master was basically, who's an old lady.
Spoilers.
I know. Who basically telling Robin, like, you need to seriously lighten up. Like, and it's pretty nice to have someone call out Robin for being so serious. Like, there's like... Because Robin doesn't know the old lady is the master. And when he initially meets her at the base of the mountain, she says to him, like, you need to go up to the temple at the apex of the mountain before sunset. And Robin's like, oh, man, I gotta hurry. And then later on, Robin's like, Why did you need me to get up here so quickly? And she goes, well, you know, if it's the sunset, then you have a harder time seeing the road ahead of you. So, you know, best to get up there while there's still daylight. So it's like things like that. Like Robin always misinterpreted it as something more serious.
Yes. Part of the reason he did not consider her as the master, it's not just sexism. There was totally a statue in that village that he assumed was the master.
Right? Like, it's like this big buff dude, too.
With a sword, I think.
Yeah. And so, it's definitely like a...
I bet she had that commission, too. It's
oh, like, yeah.
Yep.
I bet it's definitely like a...
So Luke people would leave her alone when she's in the village.
Yeah, it's like a Luke Yoda moment, you know?
Yes.
Like, but in this case, I think it's done kind of... better in a way because yes. You actually have something that's a little bit of a
bait and switch
not with the statue.
Is that magic term where you distract people?
Oh, yeah,
come on, no, you watch a lot of Penn and Teller. What's that word?
Distraction.
That's not it,
but that's
it'll
okay.
come to me.
But
I'll just say it very loud when it comes to me,
yeah,
anyway.
And so basically, I really like how that was handled. And she just basically just keeps following Robin up the mountain. And Robin's like, how are you doing this? And she goes, oh, same way as you. I'm climbing up there. And
same way as you.
So that was really fun.
Robin has to face three trials on his way up.
Mm-hmm.
And each one is a giant animal person. There's the bear, who seems like a fun guy to hang out with.
Yeah. And so is the snake.
And that's just a test of strength.
Mm-hmm.
The snake... Was the snake second?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the snake was to rely on senses other than sight.
Mm-hmm.
And the monkey was...
Balance, I guess?
I guess.
Yeah.
The monkey was monkey.
Yeah, the monkey wasn't even, like, supersized. It was just...
A normal monkey,
normal
yes.
monkey, which a is very, pretty great.
I mean, a normal monkey is terrifying. If a monkey wants to hurt you, you are going to get hurt.
And even the monkey itself is like, hey, so I don't get to see many people that come up here. You want to have some tea? And Robin's like, no, I gotta go see the master. And the monkey's like, wow, you're super serious, aren't you? All right, let's do this. I just love how the animals are just like super chill when they don't mean them any kind of malicious intent or harm. They're
yes.
just objects of the
yeah,
test.
Yeah, they're a challenge.
Yeah, and it's great. I love that.
Yeah, the bear was probably the most antagonistic because he's like, you gotta get through me.
Yeah.
I mean, they all were essentially that, but I think Robin realized by the second time that he was going to have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
To Robin's credit, he felt bad for fighting a blind snake
mm-hmm.
until it, you know, turned out the candle in a cave.
Yeah.
The
snake had a yeah. hood on him, too, and somehow
and
he was
sleeves.
Able... Yeah,
so, I guess
sleeves,
that
yeah.
I saw...
And somehow he was able to, like... raise and lower the hood, too.
Oh, I didn't even notice
I was like,
that.
How's he doing this? Yeah, he has the sleeves, too. And I was like, what's the point of this?
Martial arts.
Yeah.
It's magic.
Yeah.
So, the antagonist is, of course, the guy from the beginning who lied about seeing the master so he could, like, follow Robin to get in more easily.
Yeah, basically, Robin defeated the
There's
beast.
An easy way and a right way.
Yeah. And so basically right after Robin defeated the bear would swim away. And then that's when what's-his-name basically like hopped over the bridge too. So, and he also stole Robin's gadgets too because...
Yeah, because Robin had to leave them behind to go up the mountain correctly. Yeah. So this guy probably took a shortcut with like the grappling hook and stuff.
Mm-hmm. So it was really nice to see Robin that's like out of his element of
And I would like to reiterate, this dude is boring because martial arts... as a gimmick, are boring.
That's harsh, Mary.
It's like, oh, what's your ability? It's like, I fight in a special way. And it's like...
Cool.
Yeah. Do you dress up as a bat, too? Something?
I'm like, nope. Just really... See, like, at least in Jackie Chan, the Jackie Chan Adventures, I should say, the cartoon...
Well, they had personalities outside of martial arts for one reason.
But a lot of the humor stems from Jackie Chan movies, which is a lot of comedy and like accidental martial arts and a lot of use of props, which really kinds of like...
I'm not saying martial arts are boring, but when that's all you are as a character, that's bad.
Yeah. yeah, I know.
So not to say that he needed to be a good character. I'm just saying he's very boring.
Right. So then Robin goes up to the top, he defeats the phony martial artist through what he learned through the animals.
Yes.
And
then the old lady, like, yells at him a bunch and makes him leave.
And he's like, okay. And then she trains Robin, yeah.
And also, Robin gets the golden staff back and offers it to her. And I'm like, wait, wasn't that stolen?
I know, right? It's like, this should belong to the person it was stolen from?
Yes. Maybe really he's confused. Like, who's going to find out? Here.
Obviously, though, the real reason why you remember this episode is the B-plot, where everyone's basically trying on Robin's clothes. Yes. And it's great.
What's cute is it starts off with on Starfire, who's flashing back to all the romantic moments she's had with Starfire and just straight up pining.
Yeah, that was romantic. I like that.
Like, yeah, this is very canon now, huh?
Yeah, no, like, they're definitely like, yep, this is... Which is really funny, I guess, for a different reason with Robin and Raven, but I guess...
Yeah, because this is also the season where Robin and Raven get really close.
Yeah, and so it's kind of weird in the way... well, maybe it's not, but anyway...
I mean, maybe they were upping the Robin-Starfire thing to show that Raven and Robin was more platonic.
Yes, that is true.
If very close.
So she's pining for Robin. She thinks she sees Robin in the hallway. She gets out, and it's just Beast Boy in Robin's clothes, and Starfire's like a little miffed about this.
Yeah.
And it's and he basically said, like, don't you want to try on his clothes? And this is the first time we get to see Robin's room. And this is the last time, is the last of the main five that we finally get to see their rooms, which is kind of surprising considering it took four seasons before that finally happened. And Robin's room is a bit dull. It's basically a bed and some like a window. It's like a really kind of like...
Yeah. Basically, Beast Boy and Robin win for best rooms.
Robin or Raven?
I meant Raven. Yeah. The other R bird.
Yeah, the other bird, yes. Beast Boy and Raven definitely win for the most personality in their rooms. It's like definitely like...
Because Cyborg's is weirdly based around his robotic side, which you'd think, again, I said this before, you'd think he'd try to like put more into his human side when it came to decorating his own space. But.
Yeah, exactly. So, and so Beast Boy kind of like, you know you want to try on these costumes. And so he opens up the closet door.
He's got extras.
And there's like a whole rack of them. And then pretty soon, like, so she gets in on this. Then
somehow
Cyborg,
her shirt turns into a crop top on her. I guess that's another of her powers.
I guess so. So then Cyborg gets on in it. And then
I like
Raven
the extra touch of Cyborg, like, putting two of Robin's belts together to dress properly.
Yeah, I like it how, like, the clothes don't quite fit on everyone except for Raven. Raven is, like, the closest in body height and build to Robin. So, like, fits really nice on her. But Beast Boy, since he's the shortest, it's baggy on him. It's a little tight on Starfire. And, like you said, for some reason has that, like...
It turns into a crop top.
Crop top. And then it just super stretches out on Cyborg because he's just a big, hunking metal dude. And what do? They just pretend they're Robin. They're riding on the Robin cycle. They're calling each other, hey, Robin, this is Robin. Do you come in?
And what's funny is in the very last scene where they're eating pizza as Robin, they're doing their best Robin impressions.
And they're, like, using the tools and everything like
that. They're using his vocal patterns. Like, they're not doing his voice, but they're talking the way he does.
Yeah, it's great. And I think, and then this finally, and also Silky comes back and is also dressed as Robin as well.
Of course.
It's just so adorable. And then finally Robin comes back and he sees them all and he's like, oh, cool, it's pizza. And they're shocked. And they're shocked because he's like...
real chill.
Real chill. Because that was the thing in this episode is Robin needs to take a chill pill.
But also, how long do you think he was gone?
Yeah.
Were they in costume that whole time? Because that's... like, there were no... oh, my God. Do you think when they were, like, scripting this, they'd considered a scene where they all go out to fight crime dressed as Robin?
That'd be hilarious. Yeah, but he just comes back, and he's like, yeah, pizza, and he's
super... Robin's go!
He's super chill, and I like this. I like it that, like, not only did he learn, like, how to, like, fight better, but he just learned how to, like... chill out for a while.
And
it's great.
It comes off of is, like, they're asking Raven how it feels to be Robin. She's like, I admit the mask is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And Robin's like, yeah, the mask does make me feel cool.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. Yeah. I love it, too, when they put on the mask, like, you don't see any of their pupils either. Yes. Like a true domino mask.
Like, well, in comics, yes.
Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, the quest.
It's pretty fun.
It's a fun episode. It's a nice episode, you know? I like it.
Do you desire another slice of the cheese, Robin?
Thanks, Robin. Got room for another one, Robin?
Don't mind if I do, Robin.
You know, Robins, I have to admit, the mask makes me feel cool.
Huh, pizza. Sweet. You know, Robins... the mask makes me feel cool, too.
Which leads us to our last of the three episodes, but definitely the most... this is probably the most... the episode 3, Birthmark, is probably the most, oh my god, episode that we have seen so far. Like...
right from the beginning.
It is creepy, it is unsettling, it is, horrifying in certain kind of way.
I just remembered something.
Yeah.
From the Control Freak episode.
Yeah.
One of the side effects was Azarath Metreon Xynthos. That's why it was going wrong.
Yes.
So is that side effects include getting four eyes?
Oh, yeah. That was a great touch.
Anyway. Which is somewhat relevant to this episode. Thank you.
Yes, it is. No, I'm not. I didn't say anything. But yet... so in this episode,
A lot happens.
I guess we should probably just go through it scene by scene.
Yes, because I want to talk about this.
Okay.
Because this opens with Dr. Light,
mm-hmm.
who's, the last time he showed up was the last time Raven, well, not the last time, but the last time he showed up, Raven really went ham on him, like full demonic, scary lady. So, which is... interesting, and I don't want to get too into the, not implications, but there are really uncomfortable feelings in this show.
Right.
Like Raven's clothes get torn, she's forced to be part of a prophecy against her will.
Yeah.
It opens with Dr. Light, who by this point is very well known for having been retconned to have raped a superhero's wife.
Right.
So... I don't know if that had been the case when they wrote it. I think that would have been in poor taste if it was. I think this was just a very unfortunate coincidence because they were just bringing him back because of, you know, the Raven theme.
Yeah, because, like, Raven, like, kind of outright, like, demolished him, like, took him down.
And traumatized him.
Yeah, and traumatized him in one of the early seasons. When they're fighting Dr. Light... Raven comes up and she's like, hey, you remember me? And she's like doing her full on eldritch.
Four eyes, yeah. Tentacles.
And then Dr. Light turns to Robin and goes, I would like to go to jail now. which is a great little line delivery and yes. one of the few only comedic moments in the entire episode. They really had to get like at least some levity in.
Oh, also there was the, if you're going to commit crimes, maybe you shouldn't do it right in view of our tower.
Yeah, I really like how like Dr. Light is consistently set up as a really like poor villain. Yeah, nincompoop. Yeah, like an incompetent.
It's funny because up until Raven takes him out, they're all having issues with him. Maybe if they stop fighting him one at a time, though.
Yeah, like he was. They were fighting him on an oil rig, and he's using the power from the oil rig to generate his power. And
yes.
But even then, that's not enough for Raven, which is pretty cool. So they go back, and Raven's like, "I'm just going to be in my room for the rest of the day. Please
it's
don't bother
midnight.
Me."
Yeah.
And so basically, like, she just stays in her whole room.
All right. And before we see that she's been staying in her room, Slade busts out of the ground in a cave somewhere.
Yeah. And so, yeah, he just comes out and he's like, "I'm alive. I'm back. I'm back, bitches." Like, he's ready to kick ass. And which kind of brings up an interesting point because, you know, in season 3, when we have the mask, it's like implied that the mask must have been triggered by an outside force.
Which
somehow.
I guess at this point we are to assume either he did that from hell or his butler did it.
His butler did it, or
probably his butler.
Yeah, or whatever. I still think I am with Mary on this one. Like, he was definitely dead.
No, he was super dead.
Yeah, so he definitely, I don't think he did it back from hell either. Like, so
that'd be some impressive reception, I'll say.
Yeah, oh, all right. And,
oh, I got bars!
And screw you, Robin. All right. I've done my duty for the day. My Robin screw
While
you.
Demons are like drilling into his back with pitchforks or whatever.
Yeah. So
worth it.
She's in her room. And you'd think by now the Teen Titans would be like,
if Raven wants to be left alone, leave her alone.
Yeah, but I guess she was acting so more aloof than usual. And so what Beast Boy decided to do was, I guess, hacked into the computer archives
and
figured out her birthday.
Yeah, from her files, which is interesting because that implies they all had to do paperwork to get into the Teen Titans.
I guess. And I think she was turning 16 on this one.
That makes sense.
It's
a big day.
Big day. So she,
not a very magical number, though.
I don't know. They throw her a surprise birthday party, and she's having none of it, and she just basically goes back.
But the meat crown!
The meat crown, yeah, and the awful looking. The birthday cake, I kind of reminded me of the birthday cake from Sleeping Beauty, where it's like a freaking
mess.
Oh,
that's very gosh.
And it's like toppling over and everything. Good stuff.
And they made him a beast. They made her a Beast Boy pinata too.
Yeah, and then we get our first like Robin Raven moment because Raven's like going back to her room.
Also, before that, Beast Boy is like, "I knew this was a bad idea," and Robin says, "Give it a rest, Beast Boy." It's like, wow.
So Robin goes up to Raven and he says something very like, "Oh, that is very."
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Like, because actually, back in the mask episode, that's actually very appropriate now that I think about it, because that also involves Slade.
You've been in my mind, now let me.
Yeah, Raven was in Robin's head.
He explicitly says, "We have a bond."
Yeah. I guess she just kind of vicariously saw his memories and experienced his emotions and like his feelings. And so they have a bond now. And so Robin's saying to Raven, like, "Let me inside your mind and let me connect with you," is pretty touching.
Yeah.
It made a lot of sense. I was like, that is pretty good. I like that a lot.
And she rejects the offer.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's pretty ashamed of the whole demon ending the world thing, which I think is fair.
Mm-hmm. And so then they get the call that there's trouble and they go and it is Slade. And everyone's like, "Oh my God, it's Slade. What the fuck?"
New exciting powers, and I think he keeps talking about how nice it is to see them, and I think he genuinely means that because he's been in hell.
Yeah.
I think it's just been boring and miserable where he's been, and now it's like, "Oh, look, my old nemesis. Isn't this great?
This is great. Also, look, I can shoot fire."
Yeah, so he's an extra smug Slade.
Yeah.
with extra powers.
Mm-hmm.
He can fly. He can shoot fire.
Yeah, and it's funny because Robin's like, Slade, you're back. And Slade's like, oh, Robin, I didn't come back for you. And it's like, just... burn.
Yeah. Oh, also, the fight starts in just a place full of gears.
Yeah.
It's like, gears, cool setting, but what the hell is this place? Is this a very, very big clock?
Yeah, I know. Like, they always try to find weird places to fight Slade.
Yeah, Slade loves the dilapidated factory industrial stuff.
Yeah.
And big on bad OSHA compliance.
Yeah, pretty much. And they're having a really hard time trying to keep up with Slade. Like, you know, he was already pretty formidable. Now he has fire powers.
Yeah, there's a part where, like, I think Cyborg drops a column on him.
Oh, yeah.
And he just shrugs it off, and Cyborg's like, whoa. And Slade's like, whoa, is that all you have to say?
No one-liners or quips?
Yeah, he really needed that levity, poor
guy.
I know.
I was like, oh, this is the Slade that I love. Like, I'm sorry, Brother Blood. This is like, well, I know you're just, like, the anti-Slade, but there's only one Slade, and he does it well.
Here's the thing that went wrong with Brother Blood. He's supposed to be based on being, like, a leader. So you have to actually give him, like, a couple of characters to be his, like, underlings.
Mm. Like a Thanos kind of thing, like, where Thanos had his competent
villains. Like, more interaction.
Yes.
But, yeah.
I can see that.
If he had people following him and being loyal to him, and, like, he's like, do this, and they're like, yes, my liege, anything for you. Or whatever.
Yeah, really.
That personality would have shown better.
Yeah, really lay into why he hates Cyborg
and his
rebellious
spirit.
Instead
of just monologuing to a bunch of mindless robots.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Brother Blood and all
that. We're here to talk about how fun Slade is, and then how scary Slade is.
Right. And so they fight him. It's not going well.
Raven stops time.
Raven stops time, and because she sees Robin about to get squished, which I guess triggers it. She thinks she has kind of temporarily, like, solved the issue. But then, like, Slade glows and he goes, like, nope, you can't stop me that way.
So she grabs Robin.
Which I guess makes sense since, again, he was about to be squished by a giant gear. And she pulls him out towards the city. As they are flying past, we get to see Beast Boy mid-transformation, which is really cool.
And also a little horrifying.
It is a little horrifying because he's like, it looked like he was trying to transform into like a cheetah or something, but he was like not quite cat yet, and
yeah.
he was not Beast Boy. It looked very like off-putting, and I really love that they are like, they put that in there for the freezing sequence. So they get out to the city.
Yeah. And then there's a bit of a showdown. Raven keeps trying to run. Mm-hmm. Robin tries to hold him off for probably half a second.
Yeah.
Also, he's come into contact with her a few times and each time tears off a bit more of her costume and reveals another flaming rune on her skin.
Yeah. And he keeps saying that he has to deliver a message.
They freaking run into a church, which makes sense because we're dealing with demonic forces, except this church is not allowed to have Christian symbols because public TV gets sensitive about that.
Yep.
So I like to think that the reason the church didn't protect them is because it didn't actually have any crosses or religious imagery.
Yeah, and so...
You can tell it's a church. It's got the pews, it's got the stained glass, but it's not allowed to have specifically Christian imagery, and I think that's kind of funny.
Mm-hmm. And so, basically, the rest of the episode is just Raven trying her best to stay away from Slade, and it's just not working. And
yeah, he can fly.
It is very unsettling. I remember when I watched this episode, when it first premiered, I was really creeped out by it. I found the whole thing just like, oh my god, this is very unsettling.
Yes.
I did not like it at all.
It might in a lot of ways become more uncomfortable the older you get, because she literally gets stripped by the end of their confrontation.
Yeah, it's super, like, creepy. He grabs onto her wrist. Her hair grows long, too.
Yeah.
And, like, it basically all her clothes shred off.
Her clothes turn into a bikini.
Yeah, like, it's pretty much what it is. And, like, you see her stomach, her whole arms, and...
Which, you know, for Raven, who's a very, like, closed-off, sheltered person, is extra bad.
Yeah. And so, like, seeing all this, it's like, ooh, this is... Like, I remember being like, this is awful as when I was growing up. And I think that, like, even now I still find it unsettling, but, like, for just a slightly different reason, I guess. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's very, ugh.
Yeah.
It was very, ugh.
Yes. I'm surprised they did not have more issues with the censors on this one.
I am very shocked, in all honesty, how much they got away with this. I think... Now that they had three successful seasons under their belt,
you'd think they have a little more freedom.
I think they kind of began to expand and really begin to push what they had.
Yeah.
Which I guess works in a certain kind of view. If they wanted it to be creepy, they certainly succeeded on that part.
Anyway, Slade does a little poem about the world ending, shows her a vision of the future where everyone's turned to stone and on fire.
Mm-hmm. And we get to see a brief glimpse of Trigon.
Not to be confused with Trigon the anime.
Right. And so we originally first saw him in Raven's mirror world. Yeah. But that was more like a vision of him. And
that was a manifestation of her anxieties.
Yeah. And so that was kind of put away with, and like, all right, we've dealt with that issue, and we're boxing that away and putting it aside for now.
Compartmentalize that for later.
So what a way to bring back that guy, Trigon, just to like, this is somebody that is supposed to be feared, and they're like, we need a big bad for season 4, and they're like, what about Raven's dad? And
speaking of boring villains, I mean, this is why you had to bring Slade back, because just a big monster guy isn't actually that...
Right.
Interesting, but right. Also I don't like the demon design that's just like big red guy with horns.
Mm-hmm. And four eyes.
The four eyes thing is nice, just as a nice shorthand for this is some Trigon shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, when she everything was going creepy because she was repressing her fears, there were a lot of four-eyed things.
Mm-hmm. So she sees the vision of the future. It ain't good.
She screams, she faints. Slade lets her drop.
Yeah.
Which I feel like if she died, would that have...
Trigon would have been pissed.
But no, don't. We needed her. God damn it, Slade.
You dumbass. Anyway, she gets saved by Robin. The episode ends with her cutting her hair, putting on clothes again. And then they re-celebrated her birthday.
Which she's okay with this time.
Yeah.
Although, after all that, why would you...
I know. I'm kind of confused. I would still not be willing.
Part of it was like, well, you had a bad day. Wouldn't this thing that you hated and reminds you of this day you hate be a great idea?
Yeah. And so I think it's more of like a we're here for you kind of message. Which does get across it very well.
Also, it looks like Cyborg, like, scrapes the cake back together.
I love that. That was pretty great.
No one defeats Dr. Light! No one!
Remember me?
I'd like to go to jail now, please.
So that's Birthmark. I am honestly, like, unsure how they're going. I totally don't remember any of the other episodes from... I vaguely remember how the season ends. And even then, it was only vaguely. So I'm like, what other episodes can there be to have us lead into it? So,
and I remember the Trigon episodes.
So, yeah, I totally don't. So I'm going into this almost completely blind. Or just forgetful, I should say. So we'll see how it goes. We'll have more of our thoughts on that as we watch the season. But overall, those are the first three episodes of season 4. Again, really nice.
I'd say all three were very enjoyable.
Yeah. I'm at this point in the episode, we do our usual, favorite episode, least favorite episode.
The thing is, these are like opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. You get a nice goofy episode, you get a nice standalone, like a Teen Titans centered episode, and then you get a heavy season plot episode.
Yeah.
And it's hard to say, like, which one is my favorite or least favorite, because they succeed.
I'm just going to put the Robin episode, the quest, at the least favorite, mm-hmm. just by virtue of you know, not being the most exciting in either sense of the word.
Right. And I would say that's fair, too. I'd say that's my least favorite.
But it's a good episode, and it stands, like, it stands above a lot of episodes in the whole series for me.
Yeah, I feel like the seasons have the episodes, like, I feel like as we progress more this podcast, we've been having a harder and harder time trying to say, like, least favorite episodes, because really, I think the quality of these episodes has just been getting a little bit better and a little bit better each time.
And I think the characters are genuinely developing, if only in a subtle way, where the writers just understand them better and care about them better.
Yeah, I feel like Beast Boy is not as annoying as he once
yeah.
was.
Well, also just, like, having people, like, call him out yeah. is a difference.
Yeah.
Instead of leaving him to be the comic relief that nobody actually likes.
Okay, so what about your favorite episode? I guess for me it would be, like, the Control Freak episode.
Hey. Yeah, I guess I'd agree with that. Like, I like the Raven episode because it launches stuff and it brings us back Slade, who's yeah. always just wonderful.
Right.
If horrifying. Yeah, but
it's just like a... The problem with the season episodes is that, like, they're better taken a whole and maybe not necessarily mm-hmm. as individual ones.
I mean, I love a good Raven episode. And
that's
true. Was a good Raven episode.
Yeah, so it's really hard.
And at
this,
we're at a point where the whole team understands her better.
So it's so satisfying. This is so different from season one where Raven...
Why do you have to be weird?
Yeah, well, Raven is just so much of an outcast. Here, it's like... Well, for one thing, Starfire and Raven switched bodies and became puppets. Beast Boy saved Raven as the werewolf from Adonis. Raven's been inside Robin's head. And
Cyborg and Raven have always been kind of...
Well, Raven helps, doesn't understand Cyborg's obsession with his car and then actually comes along with him to save his car and then helps him work on his car with him, which is super adorable. And she had those smudges on his face.
Boy, that episode did not stay with me, but that's nice.
I don't know. To me, it was real. I just love that ending moment. She just has like those oil smears on his face and she's like grinning as they're fixing the car. I love it. I thought that was great. That was like a good... And so at this point, yeah, I mean, a lot of the characters have had great, like, episodes where they, like, one-on-one with each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's too bad that we don't get more, I don't think we get any, like, Robin with Beast Boy episodes, like, at all. I don't even know what that would look
yeah.
like, you know? But beyond that, I think, I'm going to have to double check this, but I think we've gotten, like, an episode where... Two of the Teen Titans have basically been paired together. I'll have to double check that. But anyway, this has been fun. I like these three episodes. Anything last minute you want to say before we wrap it up?
Starfire kept hold of her haunted puppet.
All right, she did. I totally forgot about that. And she was dressed up as
Robin. And flirting with the puppet.
I always love it when the puppets come back. They always seem to show up in, like, random backgrounds.
I'll be honest, if anybody's going to keep a creepy puppet of themselves, it's definitely Starfire.
not Raven. I guess she would be like, no, this is not
my bad memories,
style. Burn it. Yeah, no, that is funny. Excellent. Very cool. Well, anyway, thank you everyone for joining us again on Mary and Andy Geek Out. We're going to continue season 4 with season 4 episodes 4, 5, and 6. So hopefully you'll see us then and...
Hear us.
And hear us then. Yeah, exactly. In the meanwhile, stay cool out there. Hope you are having a great day. And see you next time.
And remember...
Huh?
No, just cut it off.
Oh.